You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Professional cricket in South Africa has had to dig itself out of many administrative collapses over the past 26 years of the unified era. Rushes of blood to the head and administrators that go out to bat with self-interest and in some cases questionable intent have meant that the council and boards governing the game have barely ever acted as a team, looking to post a total on the board that the game at large can be comfortable defending. But this current collapse threatens the very existence of the game in the professional era. And despite cricket now being a multi-million rand enterprise in which administrators are expected to understand the complexities of corporate law as well as broadcasting rights and player contracts and the marketing of the game, it continues to be run a bit like a village club, having failed to implement the recommended reforms of the Nicholson Commission for the last 8 or 9 years. The interim board, appointed in October of last year to implement a system of good corporate governance within Cricket South Africa, invited members of the media to attend a special meeting of the Members' Council via Zoom over the weekend. And it was an example of the sort of transparency with which the interim board believed Cricket South Africa should be run. And it also revealed the extent to which certain members of the council are determined to take the team down with them. I'm joined now by interim Cricket SA board chair Stavros Nicolaou and Villas, president of the Central Gauteng Lions, Tony Irish, director of the Federation of International Cricketers Association, and Neil Manthorpe, a well-known cricket writer and commentator. Stavros, just kick us off here. The situation has now become rather complicated, so I think perhaps it's best to just start with what your mandate was when you were appointed to establish some sort of equilibrium to Cricket South Africa late last year.
Michael, firstly, thanks very much for having me back on your program. As you correctly point out, the interim board was selected and assembled by the minister, had to be ratified by the members' council. That ratification happened on the 15th of November. So de facto, the interim board's work commenced on the 16th of November with a specific purpose of addressing a nine-point mandate that had been presented to us. These 9 points spoke to the most fundamental challenges and or issues that face Cricket South Africa. The mandate involved, first and foremost, restoration of governance, the loss of credibility and reputation that cricket had had been facing in recent times. And of course, a lot of that spoke to implementation of the Nicholson recommendations, as you pointed out earlier. We had to address areas like the restructuring of domestic cricket, transformation, the social justice initiative, and other areas that speak to strengthening both operations and governance. I might add that we were appointed for a finite period of time, and I think we've made significant progress in most of those 9 points that I mentioned. The one that's sticking out like a sore thumb at the moment is the Nicholson recommendations, which speaks to governance, and that's arguably the most important of the 9 points in the mandate. So it's disappointing that as the interim board completes its work, which it's about to do, and will be presenting a report of both its findings, the corrective measures, and recommendations for the future. So before we do that, or on the eve of doing that, it is disappointing that we have this impasse now where the Members' Council are not accepting an MRI that has been agreed. There are fundamentals of governance 101 issues that are contained in this memorandum of incorporation, as we suggested to be amended, that the council is now not accepting, as we saw on Saturday. So this is where we find ourselves, and there are ways forward, but it's going to require the Members' Council, I'm afraid, to act swiftly.
What actually happened at that meeting over the weekend, Stavros? Because the reports are that several members of the Members' Council decided not to incorporate the MOI as it stood and decided to vote in secret as well. What actually happened over the weekend?
Last Saturday's meeting was a special general meeting. It only had one agenda item. That agenda item was to consider and approve the amendments to the MRR that would give credence to the governance that we're all seeking. It would modernize governance. This, of course, was a process that took place over many months. And I might just add that the Nicholson recommendations were first introduced in 2012. So this is a process that's been going on for 9 years. And the can has been kicked down the road continuously by the Members' Council, or certainly parts of the Members' Council, because there are Members' Council members, such as Anne, who's on this call, that see reform that is going to reclaim our credibility as a cricket-playing nation. So this was a process that was followed. It led up to what we understood as an interim board was a finally agreed memorandum of incorporation. In fact, we received a letter on the 15th of April from the acting president of the Members' Council saying that they had no further inputs into the memorandum of incorporation as amended, save for one definition that needed to be amended. We, in absolute swiftness, amended that recommendation, that definition, I should say. Michael Katz and his team worked through the night. We agreed and acceded to the amendment that on that definition that the MC were requiring. We sent it back to them as the final document the next morning. That's the 16th of April. And that was the MRR that served before the special general meeting. So when you've got something that's agreed like that, there was an earlier meeting 7 days before that with a minister between myself, the acting president of the council, and the minister. We also agreed both the timelines of the 17th of April and also the major tenets of what needed to be amended. So to go to a meeting on a Saturday the 17th and to call when there's been a request for transparency, to call for a secret ballot, and then you reject the memorandum of incorporation, I'm afraid demonstrates bad faith in our books. Mm. And it has set cricket on this difficult pathway, which is going to require immense resolve to come through.
It certainly smacks of acting ultra vires and raises the question of what the other motives are for acting in such bad faith. And when it came to voting time, as Stavros pointed out, you were the only one who spoke for an open, transparent vote. It's to your eternal credit. It's to the credit of the union that gave you that mandate as well. Why did you choose to go down that path? And what do you see as the major issue and impasse that needs to be resolved here amongst the members of the Members' Council?
Sorry, Michael, just to make it clear that I am here in my personal capacity, more as the president of CGL Cricket than as a Members' Council member. None of them are aware I'm part of this conversation at this stage. So just for the record.
Sure.
On the secret ballot, whilst I actually gathered in the meeting that the auditors were in the meeting, and this could happen, I was amazed because I naturally thought that it would be a normal go down the list and everybody would say what they were voting for. So I got quite a surprise in the meeting when that did happen. So I felt I needed to voice my concern or my, you know, that I would prefer an open ballot for the meeting. Again, I was surprised that that it went to secret ballot, and going to secret ballot, I thought, here comes a problem. Because why would you have a secret ballot if we were all going to accept the MOI? I have since that meeting realized that one of the clauses in the MOI that the Members' Council think is a problem isn't a problem. It's the way they've read the wording of that MOI, which I've had clarification from one of the IBM members and I've shared with the Members' Council, and I hope they understand my explanation of it and they can work through it.
And which clause is that? What is the exact wording that they have an issue with?
So it's the mirroring of the MOI right down to affiliate level, and they think right down to club level, which is not the case.
And what would the concern be if it was mirrored all the way down to club level, that you have independents and non-cricket people administering clubs? What would be the concern?
Well, I think that's quite a, hard thing to say non-cricket people, because we can't make a generalization that independents are non-cricket people. There's lots of people out there who have previously been in cricket administration, who are cricket people, who can now become independent directors of Cricket South Africa. They can become independent directors of the various affiliate boards. And if they had to go all the way down to club level, could be on club committees.
Right.
But obviously for smaller affiliates, it is quite difficult to find the right mix of people there who actually want to come onto these boards, put in the amount of time that has to be done for absolutely no monetary reward at all, to take an immense amount of time out of your personal life, because most of it's not done during the day. And if you are have you got a young family, and it's really, really difficult to do some of these things. So I do understand the smaller affiliates and smaller places, maybe they don't have the right mix of people or the amount of people that they can, maybe get enough independence to mirror the MOI completely. So if that was a sticking point, it's fine. Yes, definitely you need independence on your board. You may not have to have a majority. It's something they should all work to in the future, but it may not, it doesn't have to happen right now.
Mm. The point about time is very important here and cannot be overlooked. The fact that the Nicholson report has been sitting gathering dust for the last 8 to 9 years, and that if there are concerns, that certainly there were enough months in the year over the last 8 to 9 years to address any of those concerns. Tony, I want to shift over to you, and from a player's perspective, it must be really difficult seeing the administrators doing such damage to the brand and the integrity of the sport that the players have given their lives over to.
Yeah, Michael, I think, I've been involved in South African cricket for nearly 18 years, and I've constantly had this frustration for the game of having two centres of power, the board and the members' council, where actually, the board needs to be running the game. And I think there's always been a fundamental misunderstanding of the fact that the members' council are not there to run the game. The members' council is there to put competent and expert directors in place to sit on the board and to run the game. And there's been a constant micromanaging of the board by the members' council over years, but that's been particularly bad, I think, of late. And, I think these attempts now to frustrate the change is simply an attempt to try and, keep that the two centres of power, to keep control over the game, and that's not what should be happening. The members' council do not have the expertise and the skill to deal with the complexities which they need to deal with, not just of running the business here in South Africa, but of taking Cricket South Africa's place at the international level. The game is incredibly complex at an international level. You need the right people to run the game from Cricket South Africa at that level. Cricket is simply a cog in the wheel of international cricket. And certainly the last 2 or 3 years, the representation at the ICC from Cricket South Africa has been far from what it should be. And I think Cricket South Africa has lost a lot of credibility at that level, and that needs to be restored.
And that flows through into business relations as well, which we'll come to. I can't imagine what it must be like at a BRICS Council meeting, being a businessman dealing with your Indian counterparts, and they look at the ham-fisted way in which we seem to manage cricket, and they think, well, if you can't manage cricket, what else is going wrong at the moment? Manners, you were on that Zoom call over the weekend, and you described it in a piece as a slow-motion train wreck. What do you make of the behaviour of the Members' Council?
I feel very much outgunned here, Michael, because I'm with three people who know a great deal more about administration, good governance, and the business of cricket than I do and ever will do. So I'll just speak purely from a media point of view. We take no pleasure at all in reporting and writing so much about the administration of the game. That should be taking place behind the scenes. I'm a cricket commentator and I'm a cricket writer and I love the game, and it's a contest between bat and ball, not between suits and lawyers. But all I would say is that the concerns apparently that the Members' Council have about non-cricket people being put in charge of the game, non-cricket people running the game, politically motivated people. Well, all I would say is that the Members' Council should have seen the level of scrutiny that we have applied to them in the media. We've reported on their behaviour. If we believe or are told that people are administering the game that's not in the best interests of cricket, then we've publicised that. And we would do exactly the same, I assume, I hope. Well, if independent directors, if and when they become the majority on the board, if they're not acting in the best interests of cricket, then we live in a democracy. And I would like to think that their actions would be as exposed as the recalcitrant members of the Members' Council currently.
Most cricket-loving South Africans will agree that we don't want to be talking about the administration of cricket and what goes on behind the scenes and the battles, as Manners has recently said, between the lawyers and the suits. We want to be talking about the performances on the field. But sadly, the performances on the field have mirrored the turmoil that we see in the boardrooms around Cricket South Africa and the Members' Council. And that point Tony raised about two centres of power. Fundamentally, do you see this as the core challenge that has to be resolved in order for us to emerge with a stronger, more administratively sound governance framework and structure to take Cricket South Africa into the future, to compete with some of the big unions? If you look at the Indian and the English and the Australian cricket boards, they're extremely powerful, and we need a strong Cricket South Africa to go out and bat for local cricket.
Absolutely. I think it's wrong to have the two centres of power, and I've always kind of found it quite strange that the Members' Council, supposedly the highest authority of cricket in South Africa, officially only has two meetings a year. You wouldn't think so, considering the amount of meetings we've had since I've been on the board on the Members' Council for a year. But, you know, in our charter and in the MOI, it's two meetings a year. So how can you be such a high authority if that's all you're going to have? And yes, the board, you know, the board does need to be. And they're the people with the competencies, and we've put them there, and they need to run cricket. I strongly feel that way.
The upshot of all of this, Stavros, and I believe that your tenure actually was supposed to come to an end over the weekend, but I would imagine it's been extended because of the current impasse. Maybe you could just give us some detail on that. But the upshot here is the minister declaring that he is going to intervene. He's issued ultimatums. We did invite the minister to join this panel, but unfortunately he had a cabinet meeting. There does seem to have been an extension now. Can the minister actually intervene now? And what is the upshot of that? Will that withdraw Cricket South Africa's status internationally? Will the Proteas not be able to play at the World Cup at the end of the year?
Michael, firstly, the part of the problem, and if I can call it the irresponsibility of Saturday, is that it has now left somewhat of a vacuum or a lacuna with respect to both the governance and oversight in the organization. Because, as you correctly point out, the term of office of the board would have ended on the 17th of April. It was an agreement we had with the Members' Council and the minister. We were working towards 17th as that date. So part of the voting pattern that caused this problem on Saturday also creates a further problem in that you're now having to extend the term of a board. These are all board members that are busy in their own right, have committed significant time and effort over the past few months, and we're hoping to hand the game over back over in a much better state than when we started our work 4 or 5 months ago. So the lacuna is being managed by a short extension. That extension will culminate in, as I mentioned earlier, the handing over of a report. That report will also inter alia include how you would manage the board lacuna if there isn't, in fact, an agreement reached timeously. So we don't have much time to sort this issue out. Let me move across over to your second question, which is the minister exercising his powers in terms of the Sports Act. I think firstly, as an interim board, we are supportive of the minister's stance here, as catastrophic as it might be in the short term, because I think you will even have a bigger catastrophe in your hands if you don't sort out these administrative and governance issues shortly. So I think that the minister's patience has worn down. I think the cricketing public's patience is wearing thin, and everybody's patience is wearing thin. And the only way that this can be resolved now, because if the minister does eventually pull the trigger, the things that you mentioned, i.e. not being internationally recognized, national colors being removed, sponsors walking away, and all the other catastrophic consequences, the only way I can see this being resolved right now, because there's a process that the minister will have to go through before he executes on these powers, is that the Members' Council find it within themselves, but swiftly so, like in the next 24, 48 hours, to say, listen, we agree to a memorandum of incorporation. If there are parts they don't agree with, notwithstanding that they did agree a week ago, make those known immediately. They shouldn't be reopening things they've agreed to previously. If there are genuine concerns, we will have a look at them. We will not. We don't want to go into these endless meetings again, because the track record is kick the can down the road and hopefully everyone forgets about it and you carry on with the status quo. To summarize, Michael, if the MC find it within themselves and say we are going to agree on the MII as amended and as it stands before us, we will institute a what's called a Section 60 round robin resolution, and we will sign that resolution, accept the MII, we will do so in 48 hours. A crisis will be averted and we can move on. That is the only option that I can see right now. And to the extent that the MC are listening to this message, I think that they should listen carefully and avert a crisis, because the ball is very much in their hands at the moment. They are the ones that can stop this crisis and also the minister from executing on what he is legitimately entitled to do in terms of the act.
That is the nuclear option, although I did read a report in Business Day with one of the members saying that they are disputing whether or not the minister can indeed intervene, citing constitutional changes on the constitutions of SASCOC members and Section 13.5, which says the minister may not intervene if the dispute or mismanagement in question has been referred to SASCOC for resolution, unless SASCOC fails to resolve such a dispute within a reasonable time. Do you think, Stavros, that that is a misreading of where things stand? Because it seems to me, if that's the way the Members' Council are reading this, they're going to dig in their heels.
So, Michael, the Members' Council track record is one of, I'm afraid to say, prevaricating and raising all these legal points. You've seen what's happened in our country over the last 10 or 15 years. When there's a problem, you kick the can down the road and you throw the law book at the issue, right? Now, if you don't want to transform, if you don't want to change, you will find every little legal point to contest and challenge. And this is what's happening here again. So if it wasn't challenging tenets of the MRR, when you get past that, then you're challenging what an independent board means. Everyone knows what an independent board means. So you keep playing this game, I'm afraid to say, until you run out of time. And this is what's going on. So for me, it's not about whether the minister's got the powers or whether SASCOC should or shouldn't get involved. Those are all peripheral sideshows deliberately put into the piece so you continue to frustrate the process. One thing and one thing alone can happen. Law aside, institute a Section 60, approve the MRI. If you want to sit down as Members' Council and get SASCOC on side, then that's fine. Do that. But institute this swiftly in the next few hours and save the game and avert a crisis. I think the message is very clear. Stop playing all these games about the legal point here and the legal point there. A Section 60 is quite permissible. And that's where I see Right now, only salvage, Michael. Thanks very much.
Tony, just one last point from the players' perspective. We've also got a big change confronting Cricket South Africa, the end of the Colpack era and the end of the franchise system, which it's hoped would strengthen the game right now. From a player's perspective, how does this now feed into any sense of motivation or sense of hope for change, positive change, leading to better foundations for cricket in the country?
Well, I think, Michael, that we're a small country in the context of the ICC. At an international level, and the small countries are really up against it when it comes to the future of the game, and in particular with regard to retaining their players. This is an absolutely key challenge of Cricket South Africa going forward. 80% of the revenue of Cricket South Africa is generated by the national team. You have to have a strong national team. And we are facing challenges because of the lure of these T20 leagues. You'll find a lot of our good players don't have to play for South Africa. They can go and play in the T20 leagues. They can make a career of that. We want them to make a career of playing for South Africa. That is going to take change. That is going to take leadership to lead us through these challenges, the challenge of retaining our players. And we can't afford these governance games. It's quite clear that the governance needs to change. And once it's changed, the task of the new board running Cricket South Africa is to actually address the longer term challenges, foremost of which is the retention of its best players.
Yeah, so we're not seeing players like Manus Labuschagne single-handedly destroy New South Wales and turning out for Australia and churning out 100 after 100. That is what the cricket-loving public would like to see. Thank you very much to our panel, Interim Cricket SA Board Chair for now, still Stavros Nicolaou, and Vias, the President of the Central Gauteng Lions, in her personal capacity, Tony Irish, Director of the Federation of International Cricketers Association, and Neil Manthorpe, cricket writer and commentator, speaking for all of us. Cry the beloved game.